Asking about reparations for slavery has become a standard question for Democratic presidential candidates ahead of 2020, and it's left many candidates scrambling to respond.
I propose a $100 billion plan of reparations.
If it means just a cash payment or a check to families, I would not support that.
What I do find challenging is the best way to do that. How to ensure that it's fair.
People aren't starting out on the same base. We have got to give people a lift up.
The debate around whether or not to fund reparations for Black Americans goes far beyond being a political talking point. For Maxine Crump, a descendant of slaves, the definition of what reparations are is clear.
It's a repayment for what has been owed.
Crump is a descendant of slaves sold by Georgetown University in 1838, and she's the president and CEO of Dialogue on Race Louisiana. We sat down for a conversation about reparations in the United States, what they could look like, and what it would take to make them a reality. Also with us was Catherine Franke of Columbia University, author of the forthcoming book Repair, Redeeming the Promise of Abolition, and Nikichi Taifa, an attorney and founding member of the National Coalition of Blacks for Reparations in America. I asked Maxine first to reflect on the legacy of slavery and how it should inform the conversation.
So when I look at the fact that our lineage goes back before the United States was a country, and realize that hundreds of years of enslavement being treated as chattel, the use of their bodies in labor, and all of that was used to enrich the country and much that followed today, this country sustains its wealth from those people, and that included my ancestors. We are born of America. We are America's people. This is our homeland. And for America to disenfranchise those who were enslaved, the former enslaved, and its descendants, and allow many of the atrocities that have descended from then, that have continued, and how we tolerate that and let it be okay is what I think about when I think about this conversation of reparation.
Nikichi, when we talk about the objectives of reparations, what are those in your view?
Well, I would say that in the context of Black people in the United States, the quest for reparations essentially constitutes four elements. Number one, the formal acknowledgement that there was a historical wrong and an official unfettered apology for the dehumanization and the atrocities of the enslavement era and beyond. Number two, the recognition that the injury has continued throughout the years and it still manifests today. Number three, the commitment to redress by the federal government, which sanctioned the enslavement and subsequent segregation, by corporate entities, by private institutions, by religious groups, by academic institutions, etc., which enjoyed unjust enrichment from the era. And then number four, the actual compensation in whatever form or forms are agreed upon. And that's the essential catch-all. What is agreed upon between the agreed parties and the entities that will be compensating?
I want to bring in Catherine here. Why are we talking about reparations in the mainstream again today? What is it that through history has brought this back up for Americans periodically?
Well, it's an interesting question of why this issue has gotten traction now. I think we could say the same thing about Me Too. We could say the same thing about Black Lives Matter. These deep wounds in the U.S. culture have been festering for a very long time, and then suddenly it seems like they get traction. And I think in some ways the fact that it's gotten traction now is a symptom or an effect of the Trump administration, where we see racism in its rawest form, unhindered by any kind of attempt to blunt it. The accumulated weight of our failure to face this problem is in some way the result of why we have Trump in the White House now. And I think it makes this discussion that much more pressing and one that we just can't turn away from anymore.
Nikichi, I would love for you to weigh in on that, what Catherine just said, because I know you've been doing a lot of work within the Beltway, if you will, within D.C. So tell me a little bit about how this reparations issue has, how far it's gotten or how far it hasn't gotten in Washington.
Yes. Well, first of all, I just want to say I've been organizing around the issue of reparations since 1970. 75 actually, at a time when the topic was not popular. It was definitely on the fringes. It was not fashionable. But one of the things that's important to recognize is that this is not new, okay? In 1987, in this country, legislation was passed authorizing the payment of $20,000 to each Japanese American detention camp survivor, a $1.5 million trust fund to be used to educate Americans about the suffering of the Japanese Americans, a formal apology from the United States government, and a pardon to all of those who resisted detention camp internment. It is a sad commentary that the United States government has not taken responsibility for its role in the enslavement era or post-slavery segregation and all of the discriminatory policies that we see today, whether it's in healthcare or education or the criminal punishment system. I will say that in 2009, the Senate passed an apology bill, but it contained a disclaimer that those seeking compensation could not use that apology to support a legal claim against the United States. So that's why when I talk about the essential elements of reparations, I say an unfettered apology, an apology that doesn't come with any chains or any strings.
If I can add to the important history that Nkechi's just given us, I would push it back even into the end of the Civil War. At that point, as the Northern military was moving through the South and liberating people that had been held in slavery across the South, Northern military officials recognized that some kind of reparation must be given to freed people, both to compensate them for their stolen labor, but also to recognize the horror of enslavement itself. There was also this sense that if you just liberate people into abject poverty, they will be locked into a kind of intergenerational poverty that they'll never escape from, and that's exactly what we've seen. So one of the leading generals at that time, General Saxton, who was working in the Sea Islands in Georgia and South Carolina, he led an effort to get land to freed people in what we are now familiar with in units of 40 acres and a mule as reparations. And those reparations were made. Land was transferred. And then once President Lincoln was assassinated, the new President Johnson took all that land away and gave it back to the people who had previously owned black people. It's just outrageous. So it's time we came back to this, not just to the movement of the 70s and the 80s, which is hugely important, but to what was a widely viewed moral imperative in the 1860s.
And one of this, we're talking about, you know, financial and economic implications of one of the biggest moral failings that this country has ever had. And then the pushback to one solution here seems to be, it would be impossible to have reparations. We can't give everybody a check. That seems to be a big pushback or at least a talking point. Nkechi, what's your response to people who say it's just impossible to implement any kind of reparations?
Well, I would say absolutely nothing is impossible. Where there is a will, there is a way. But one of the things that's critical to understand is that reparations is not just about a check. It's not just about money. Reparations is about repair. It's about amends. And a reparations settlement can come in as many forms as necessary to equitably address the many forms of injury sustained from chattel slavery and its continued vestiges. And, you know, some of those forms, it can in fact, and could and should include cash payments, but it can also include land or economic development or funds for scholarships and community development. I mean, they could involve education or multimedia depictions of African Americans and textbooks that teach correct history, development of historical monuments and museums. It can be the elimination of discriminatory laws and practices, many of which are found within the criminal punishment system, all of the infringements on voting rights. So reparations can be very broad. But the important thing is, it's not what the perpetrator says it's going to be. It's what the victims themselves come up with. And that's why a commission is so important, or some type of collaborative, unifying, broad-based initiative where African Americans, descendants of Africans enslaved in the United States can come together and decide, well, just what should it look like.
Tanzina, I would like to speak to that as well. This is Maxine. Anybody can step up and look at something and look at it as impossible. Nkechi indicated that there is a way to do this without major disruption if we sit down and strategize. But it's, again, if we know enough. I think that those who are fighting against this change is because they're going with the common narrative that Black people are somehow something that isn't fully American, which was the way that the narrative was formed to say, these are not quite fully human. They're supposed to be mastered. They don't know how to run their own lives. So we're still not believed when we speak up. And it can't just be the voices of those who have been victimized, but they have to lead. And none of the movements that have made things better to the degree that they have been better for those who are descendants of slaves, it always came with other people recognizing it and other groups joining the movement to make a difference. And that can happen now. We do not have to have the major disruption. We're a major nation. We're the greatest nation, the most powerful nation, and the wealthiest nation. We certainly can come up with this strategy. And after all of the time that this reparation need has been in place, we are just now, this major country, just now talking about this as if what's new. It's new in the minds of people because it's able to go under the radar, and there are enough people who believe that this country still is entitled to belong to white people and let whites determine what else everyone else who's not white can have. And we don't say that out loud because it's considered insensitive, and yet it's insensitive to let this happen. If this isn't true, why are we still grouping people by color and asking them to check the box? And if this isn't true, why are the major leaders of this country and the major wealth in the hands of those who are white? It has to be something systemic that's supporting this.
And some of the hesitance you see among white people today around reparations is, why should we be writing checks to Black people? Some of those people arrived in the United States recently. They weren't enslaved. I have no obligation to write a check. My parents didn't own slaves, or my great-grandparents didn't own slaves. And to them, and I hear those people a lot, I would say people like myself were on the radio. I'll tell you, I'm white. White people have been the beneficiaries of white supremacy in all aspects of our lives, even if we or our ancestors never owned slaves. Just as I would say Black people have been burdened by a badge of inferiority that attached to that concept of white supremacy, whether they had ancestors who were enslaved or not. And it's that collective reckoning with the ideology of white supremacy that made chattel slavery possible in the first place that I think we have to use as the way to frame reparations today. Someone like me, I'm winning a lottery, right? That I got born into a family that has intergenerational wealth because of white privilege. I have no entitlement to that money other than luck. So I think as a collective project, we should tax those estates and put that money into a trust. I feel like my family has been holding that money in a trust for people who were owed property and some kind of means as reparation at the end of slavery. So we can do this. We can do it in a collective way, and I think we have to.
Catherine, thank you for that. Nkechi, the presidential candidates, or at least some of them for 2020, are already talking about this term, reparations. Julian Castro comes to mind. A couple of other folks have sort of brought this up. Do you hear this as talking points, Nkechi, or do you hear this as real interest in finally getting to a solution around reparations?
Well, I think it might have started as talking points, but I think that it is blossoming into people really looking behind the rhetoric that they are saying. If the 2020 candidates don't do anything else, they and every member of Congress must endorse the passage of H.R. 40. Many of those who are running are currently in the Senate. There is no Senate companion bill to H.R. 40. That needs to be enacted as well. And I say that H.R. 40, the Commission to Study and Develop Reparation Proposals for African Americans Act, is the least common denominator.
I want to follow up on that, Nkechi. What is it going to take to get the political will to make that happen? Because we can talk about getting it done. We can talk about all the reasons for getting it done. We can talk about, as Catherine said, the estate tax. There are baby bond proposals floating out there to help close the racial wealth gap. There's a million different proposals, but we need the political will. And do you see that happening?
Well, I will say that the issue of reparations in the United States was once in the not too distant past totally unthinkable by mainstream America as viable public policy. I think that is beginning to shift, and it's beginning to shift because the conversation is beginning to be had in the mainstream press. It's not on the fringes. It's beginning to be part of the conversation where it should have been all along.
Maxine, I'd like to end with you. What does our future look like if we do not address reparations, at least in a meaningful way? And are you hopeful that we will?
Oh, yes. I'm definitely hopeful. I don't have to think about what's going to happen if we don't do this, because we're going to do it. We need to become who we say we are in our founding document, the Constitution. So I'm not worried about whether reparation is going to happen. I just want it to happen, as Nkechi said, in the best way possible, with everyone understanding it. And they're going to understand it when the education is proper. And I have a lot of hope for the future.
Maxine Crump is a descendant of slaves sold by Georgetown University in 1838, and is also the president and CEO of Dialogue on Race Louisiana. Catherine Franke is professor of law, gender, and sexuality studies at Columbia University and author of the forthcoming book, Repair, Redeeming the Promise of Abolition. And Nkechi Taifa is an attorney and founding member of the National Coalition of Blacks for Reparations in America. I'd like to thank you all for joining us in this conversation.
It's been a pleasure.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
All right, y'all, you've been talking to us about this, so it's your turn.
Hi, my name is Tony. I'm calling from Franklin, Massachusetts. Yes, I think there should be reparations for slavery. African-American leaders should get together with other national leaders to decide how this will be settled. It's time to begin the process of making reparations for this great sin that our nation committed.
Hi, my name is Cree White. I'm calling from Charlotte, North Carolina. I think they are owed. I think they should be paid out in the form of free education and also in land that was promised and never delivered. I hope it comes about in my lifetime. We saw our first black president. Maybe we'll see this as well.
My name is Michelle. I'm calling from Honolulu. The United States owes much to descendants of former slaves. How about ending housing discrimination in a real way? Better schools in black communities to bring them up to par with the best schools in white communities. I don't think just handing out cash payments will help pull people out of poverty. Repairs and maintenance to roads, buildings, and black neighborhoods should be a priority. We can do this, but are the powers that be willing to do so?
Carl Rice from Angola, New York. Slavery, or at least the results of slavery and the effects of it, have transferred to ghettos where it's not segregated necessarily anymore, but those people could still use a chance to get out because the town or municipality itself was affected in a way that people living there in the future, whether black or white, would have a hard time pursuing the American dream.
Reparations would only further divide this nation so late since the end of slavery. And what amount of money could possibly equal the amount of horror, degradation, abuse, and indignity suffered by slaves? It would never be enough to absolve our ancestors of their guilt. True reparations would be an actual equality lived rather than just empty written equality not realized in the form of human rights. This is Nikki Mohammed-Fawzi from Arlington, Texas.
Thanks, folks. 877-8-MY-TAKE is our number, or tweet us at The Takeaway.